Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can send them to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Well, good evening, everybody. We're starting off January. We were so lucky last week. I had my friends Deborah and Chris here, and we started off the year great by talking about how women can get back on their feet and move ahead, whether they're with somebody or on their own. And we're going to be continuing that discussion throughout the next few months with some women who are able to do it and to see what tips they can give to you. Because I think a lot of times we're in a situation where we don't have a clear perspective of what comes next in our lives or if there even is a next in our lives. But before I introduce my very special guest tonight, I just want to remind people that it's coming to that time in a couple of months from now when we're going to have our healing weekend here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're coming back to Philadelphia, my hometown. So if you're interested in the weekend, we'd love to have you. It's a wonderful healing weekend. That's why it's called the Healing Weekend. It's there so you can meet others who are living this life, who have gone through the challenges, some who have successfully moved ahead to give you advice and support, some who are just starting their journeys. We're all at different points. The main thing is that you can be in a room and not have to say a word, and everybody understands what you're feeling and what you're thinking. So if you're interested in my healing weekend here in Philadelphia, it's my gift to women once a year. There's no charge except for your traveling expenses and the hotel and food. But it's, like I say, a lifetime worth of experiences. Make sure you write to me at bonkay@aol.com. We've had women come from as far as England, from Canada, from all over the country and outside the country. And we have wonderful speakers and workshops on how to move your life ahead. It's April 29th and 30th here in Philadelphia, 5 minutes from the airport. So please send me an email and I'll be happy to send you information. So tonight, without further ado, I'd like to introduce my very special guest. I'm so happy to have back on our show, Christy Van Sickle. Christy, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Bonnie, and thank you for inviting me back. I enjoyed talking with everybody last time.
Well, I know that so many women felt so inspired after they heard you last time that I'm only sorry you didn't come back. But hopefully you'll come back sooner next time.
Yeah, we'll have to do it quicker next time.
Absolutely, because you really shared so much of your life that really touched the hearts of a number of people who wrote into me and thanking me for having you on the show. Because you've gone through so much in your own life and you've turned it around. So maybe you could tell people a little bit about your past situation, why today commemorates a special time of your life, and then we'll go on from there.
Well, at this point, I don't know that I would call it a special time. unfortunately, January 15th is the day that I got conned into marrying the same gay man. And the first time around, it was we had met on a blind date and we hit it off. And I kept thinking, he's my best friend. And it was very strange. He would not kiss me before we got married. He thought that was something that he wanted to save for marriage, he told me. And I was young and naive and thought, well, that's so romantic. He's not after me for sex. You know, he's going to wait for me. How romantic is that? But I always thought it was strange. It was in the back of my mind that it was weird. And so I let it go. And then the wedding day came, and January 15th, and he barely kissed me. And I remember, like, in the wedding, I remember thinking, okay, well, maybe he's just embarrassed to kiss in front of people, you know? And then that night, it was painfully obvious that he had not had a hard time waiting to have sex with me. So that was the beginning. And that was January 15th.
I was 21. It was on
January 15th before I turned 22 in March. And so I was close to 22, but not there yet. And I was a virgin
and I was very inexperienced.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what kind of religious background did you come from? Did you come from a church kind of family?
I did. I had grown up in church all my life, and I had waited. I had saved myself for marriage, that kind of thing. And so I didn't know what it was supposed to be like. And when it wasn't like I had imagined it or like I had seen or heard about it, I convinced myself that all that was just in the movies. It was just, you know, stuff they make up for books and movies and TV because it's not really real. And so I dismissed it, but I knew something was wrong. And during those first few months, I tried really hard to, you know, I'd try the things I had seen on TV. Like, you know, I left rose petals in a line, you know, and one day I left, you know, it sounds just so embarrassing now, but I left my clothes in like a line to me, you know, to try to attract him. And
I'm sorry, are you there? Christy? Hello? I think I've lost Christy, but she's going to be back here soon. So Christy was telling us her story. And I think that a lot of women share that in the sense that they don't understand when they get married, they hold off, or you don't get involved sexually with a man, you know, when you have a gay husband, that is, and you're wondering why, what is it that's different about this, that he must really respect me? Hold on one second, here comes Christy back.
Failed, I'm sorry.
Okay, we're back.
I don't know.
There we are.
I don't know what happened. Our call just failed. I won't interrupt you. I know you were in the middle of something.
I was just summing up what people, you know, a lot of times when you grow up in a church kind of environment, and I think that it's expected that you're not going to be fooling around too much before you get married, so that wouldn't necessarily be a red flag that something's wrong, correct?
Right, exactly. And I didn't know what it was supposed to be like, and so I knew it didn't feel right. It, you know, something really felt off, But I disregarded. I kept pushing it away, and I would get rejected all the time. I was accused of being a nymphomaniac. You know, all the things that, as I have been in the healing process over the last several years, I've realized they're really textbook, those things that happen to so many of us. And it was just a constant beating down. You know, I had grown up singing in the church, and he made it very clear, I do not have a good singing voice, and so I quit singing. So much of who I was, he beat down to build himself up. And sexually speaking, you know, he beat me down to the point that I felt like I must be unattractive. I must be gross. I must be, you know, I must have been repulsive is what I really got to the point where I thought. And then December of that year on Christmas Eve, he told me that he thought he might be gay. Mm-hmm. And again, naive and stupid, I had taken vows, and in my mind and my heart, I was never going to break my vows. So I said, what do we do now? And he said, well, I don't want to be gay. And I said, are you going to act on this? And he said, no, I don't want to. And I was stupid, and I said, if you promise never to act on it, I promise never to tell anyone. And that was the day I put myself in his closet and began a death of me in trying to keep his secret. And I don't have to tell the ladies on this call how hard that is and what a burden it is. And it really is, you know, to try to pretend like everything's okay when inside nothing is okay. And I lived in that for 4 years, and I found porn on his computer, gay porn, of course. I confronted him with it. He told me that these were the early stages of the internet, and so I didn't understand how all these things happened. And he told me we'd had some kind of computer glitch or something. And then he finally admitted it to me, but then told me he wasn't going to do it anymore. And I continued to forgive until I went on a trip with my mom, or to my mom and dad's house, to do a little convention thing that they had going on in their hometown. And while I was gone, I was trying to call him, and he would never answer the phone. And it turns out that he had gone out with a guy while I was gone. And when I got back, just nothing was right, like, between us. We couldn't find the friendship again. And in the years that have passed since, I have had to come to terms with the fact that there was never a friendship, because you don't do to a friend what he did to me. You know, you don't put a friend in a situation of having to keep a secret that really steals so much from them, you know, just as a person. You don't put a friend in a situation where they could contract a deadly disease without telling them. You know, you don't do that. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. But we stayed married until 1998. February of 1998, he told me that he was gay and that he wanted to go live it. And again, I said, so what do we do? I was still just so, I had such tunnel vision that I had made a vow I wasn't going to break it. And even though, you know, by this point, as a woman, I was miserable. I had a friend, and I didn't want to lose my friend. And he said, well, we get a divorce. And so we decided on Groundhog Day of 1998 that we were going to get a divorce. And he changed overnight at that point. He got mean with me. He would yell at me. I moved out on Valentine's Day. So there were 12 days in between we're getting a divorce and the move out. And I moved out, but during those 2 weeks or so, he was on a dating rampage. I mean, I was in his way. He couldn't get away from me fast enough. He would yell at me, which he had never really done that much in the past. And so it was just like this evil metamorphosis took over.
Hello? Once again, I'm not sure why we lost Christy, but she'll be back momentarily, I'm sure. So we're listening now to her talking about how that marriage ended. And I really did have a couple questions that I wanted to ask her. And hopefully that will tie in. Here's one more time. We'll try it.
Okay, here we are back
hey, Bonnie,
again.
I have no idea what's happening with my phone. It just keeps dropping our call.
I know, it's really strange, right?
He just went through this metamorphosis, and in the year and a half after that, we continued to talk because, again, I really believed he was my friend. And in our talking, I was, I hate to say I was able to because it was terrible, but I walked through him living with six different men. And
wow.
Breakups and all this kind of stuff. I visited him at Christmas time. I watched him physically change. He went from a normal-sized guy to this stick-thin skeleton of a person. I mean, he just lost so much weight. He got both of his ears pierced and everything. He just looked like a totally different person from the person I knew. And it was devastating emotionally to me. And then in November of 99, he called me and said he had great news. And I said,
well, before
the great
you go
news?
To the great news, before you go
sure.
to the great news, Chris, could I just ask you a few questions?
Absolutely.
Going back to when you were married, in any way
mm-hmm.
whatsoever, did you feel he was placing any blame on the failure for the marriage on you?
I think that he was typically pretty typically pretty willing to accept a lot of the blame because he got to the point where he knew that it was breaking my heart every day. But it was
mm-hmm.
honestly as though he couldn't or wouldn't do anything differently. It was just like a driving force for him. During those first 4 years, I have never been told for a fact that he cheated on me. Knowing what I know now, I'd be very surprised if he didn't. But I've never
right.
learned anything concrete that he did. When we got remarried, and now, you know, that's a later part of the story, but when we got remarried, he cheated on me habitually. It was an all-the-time reckless kind of betrayal. I mean, just
mm-hmm.
reckless. Public restrooms, public parks, everywhere he could find somebody. And by his own admission, it was over 120 people. So, and they were all strangers. It was never a relationship situation. It was always a stranger. And like
mm-hmm.
people he would make eye contact with in public. And back then, they use this eye contact system. Now I'm sure they use Grindr and those kinds of apps that most of us, I guess, know about. But it was like an agreed upon protocol. You'd see somebody in the store, make eye contact,
mm-hmm.
and meet in the bathroom. So it was a very blatant and very habitual kind of thing. When I found out about the cheating, well, and I have to say, he told me about the cheating. He volunteered it completely. And he told me everything. And we went for about 2 months where we had an open door, all questions answered policy, where anything I asked him, he would tell me the truth. And so for about 2 months, I got absolute truth out of him. And I learned more than I wanted to know, but stuff I needed to know. But after about 2 months, that stopped, and I couldn't get him to talk to me. I couldn't get him to answer questions, and then all of a sudden, he wasn't gay, and it was emotional turmoil and just mental chaos, just trying to make sense of life in the aftermath of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he was pretty decent about admitting where he had screwed up and what he wanted me to do. And this is the typical pattern. You know, you have the honeymoon phase where they're just wonderful, wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and then they pull away and they keep you in limbo that way. And so what he would do is I would say, I don't want you on the computers because that's where it's happening. You know, I would pinpoint all the places that things could go wrong. And I basically
exactly.
became a babysitter. I became a computer watchdog. I became a, you can't go to the bathroom when we go out in public. I became really his babysitter. And it was when I realized what I had become that I said, this is not the life I want. You know, I told myself time and time and time again, just stick with it because nobody's going to want you now. Number one, you're inexperienced sexually. You don't know what you're doing. And number two, you're screwed up in the head. Look at what he's done to you. You can't trust. And so nobody's going to want you. So do you want to be alone? You know, and that was really the mental script I went through was you're going to be alone. You're going to be by yourself. You know, how are you going to make it emotionally, financially, all these different kinds of things. And so I kept myself trapped for an extraordinarily long time. It ended up being nearly 18 years by the time it was all over. It was four, and then it was 14 almost. So
and you know what?
That is a very long time.
Very long time, Christy. And I do want to tell women who are also trapped, and I think you can confirm this, that you can never look back and say shoulda, woulda, coulda when you didn't, because you do at the time whatever you have to survive, and you're not thinking clearly, you're mentally beaten down, you can't see the road to freedom, there seems like there's no way out because you become somebody who you aren't to start with. Now, you said yourself that you became a babysitter. I say to myself I became a full-time detective because I was checking everything all the time, every minute, trying to have some control over something that none of us can control. You know, there's just no way to control, you know, a train that's running down the track and coming towards you. There's no way to stop
it. And we shouldn't
it,
have
you know,
to
no
control
matter
it.
What constraint. Right. We can put as many constraints on as. But, you know, I think we go through all this bargaining, even in our own heads, what can I live with? And I know I did that during my marriage because, you know, I thought, well, if you do this, and it's only once every 6 months, and I don't have to know about it, and it's with the, you know, you make all kinds of bargains because you don't want to lose the man that you love. Regardless of all the flaws, it's still your partner in life. You don't want to disrupt a marriage. You don't want to have to start all over. And plus the fact that you're not who you were meant to be to start with because you became somebody else. So it's not the real you that's feeling that. It's the you that's been created through this disaster that's feeling that. Would you agree with that?
100%. He didn't take it. He put me through things that made me give up pieces of who I was because I let him beat me down. I let him teach me that I was not pretty. I let him teach me that I was not desirable. I let him teach me that I couldn't sing. I let him teach me so many things about me that were not true. But when you hear something often enough, you start to believe it. And Julia Roberts said it in Pretty Woman. She said, the bad stuff's easier to believe. And it's true. And that's what I did to myself was I got to the point where I didn't trust me because I kept thinking, you know, maybe I can't sing. Maybe I'm not pretty. You know, I never thought I was beautiful, but I didn't think I was gross, you know. And I got to the point where I did. And I gained a lot of weight. I wore baggy clothes because subconsciously, I guess, I was living up to what I was being treated like. I was beginning to take on that physical appearance of a person, of the person that he treated me like I was. And so it was, yeah, I definitely agree with you on that.
I think also the fact that you brought up, which is so sad, but it's a sadness that we see every day from the women who are part of our network, that you just don't even know who you are, what you are. You never feel pretty or good about yourself. And your husband just has no clue about how this is emotionally destroying you and what this is doing to you because he's just not capable of understanding this because he chooses not to or because he just doesn't. But this is not within his thought process that, oh, my God, look what I'm doing to this poor wife of mine. Let me do the right thing and say goodbye. Let me tell her I can't change who I am.
I truly got caught up in a Florence Nightingale syndrome almost. It was like, God bless him. Look at what he's been through. You know, he's struggled so much and this has been so hard because it all began for him when he was 8 years old and a neighbor boy was teaching him, you know, how to do all these things. And I felt so sorry for him. And you know, I took on a caregiver's mentality of feeling sorry for him, so I need to stay with him, I need to help him. Who am I to abandon him when he's been through so much? And I felt like I would be the bad guy if I left somebody who needed help. And so I kept myself in it because I kept myself beaten down that I would be a bad person if I left somebody who needed my help.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that we hear
back,
that from women all the time, that, you know, I took mm-hmm. a vow. I promised to love them through sickness and through health.
Right.
So when
yes.
you were looking at it, you were looking at, here's my poor sick husband.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be there to help him. That's what my took my vow to, right?
Right. And I had heard him so many times say, I don't want this. I'm trying to stop it. You know, he tried I can't remember what it's called, but there's some church group where they try to pray it away and these kinds of things. And I can't stand that program because, you know, I just don't agree with the principles. I think it, you know, it sounds good to a lot of people, but I think it builds people up for a reality that is not at all reality. But he had been to all those things. He truly claimed not to want it. And because I could see him, or at least hear him, talk about how much he did not want to be gay, I felt like, then who am I to walk away if he's trying? You know, he's asking forgiveness, and, you know, asking forgiveness from me after the divorce. He didn't tell me anything about all the cheating. I didn't learn that for many, many years after that was happening
mm-hmm.
during the second marriage. But, you know, he kept telling me that he just didn't want that he wanted a real marriage with me. And I felt like I would be cruel to walk away from somebody who said he was trying. Now, looking back, I can think of, I used to have night terrors when I would go to sleep during the second marriage, and I would have these graphic dreams or graphic nightmares of him with men. And I would wake up crying, and I'd wake up and talk to him and say, I keep having these nightmares. I can't take this. This is killing me. And he'd say, why don't you trust me? Now, all this time that I'm having these night terrors and he is complaining to me that I'm not trusting him and telling me that he's telling me the truth, it's during the same time that he's hooking up with men in bathrooms all over the place and in public parks. And so he was blatantly lying to me day after day after day for years. You know, it wasn't like it was just never a discussion and he just didn't tell me. It was that almost like probably 5 mornings a week, I'd be saying I was up all night. I couldn't sleep because every time I'd go to sleep, I was having these nightmares. And he would say, why don't you trust me? I don't understand why you don't trust me. It's not true. All that's gone. I don't ever think about that anymore. And so I can't count the number of times we had that same discussion. And
was there anything that tipped you off that to start thinking like that, Christy? I mean, was there something that was, I mean, I know you were thinking about it, but I'm saying, was there something to make you suspect it was going on?
No, and having been through, I think, all of the graphic discussions when he was living with the 6 men during the time we were divorced, I had enough mental pictures that just the thought of it, you know, when you think about your husband with somebody else, you know, it's enough to get the visual picture in your head that you don't want. And I had graphic pictures in my head, and, you know, I had seen the way he had physically changed, and I had seen him in that lifestyle, and I couldn't ever shake it. He had asked me to remarry him so many times after he claimed that God had changed him, and I kept saying no, 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 and finally he basically said that if I believed that God could do anything, that I would remarry him. And that if I didn't, I was saying that God couldn't change people.
Uh-huh.
And so he kind of beat me down you know, like emotionally, just like, okay, we are. And I honestly kept going back in my head to, you're my best friend. You're my best friend. And there are a lot of people who never get to marry their best friend. And look how lucky I'll be. Even if we never have sex, at least I'll be married to my best friend. And I convinced myself that everything would be okay. And there were a lot of years that I would have that same talk with myself. At least I'm married to my best friend. And I think that was one of the hardest parts of recovery for me, was admitting that he had never been my best friend. And so it was a loss of not just a husband, but it was a loss of somebody that I truly had believed was my best friend. And
when he told you he had changed and you went back again, was there any better intimacy between the two of you physically?
No, no. He faked it at the very beginning, like the weekend we got married. But then after that, it was very quickly back to, actually, there was less sex the second time around than there was the first time. And it moved into, like a weekly chore, like Friday night, you know, I don't have any energy tonight.
Like an obligation.
And then Saturday it was like, okay, we'll do this tonight, you know, and it honestly became like the weekly has to be done. And then, but it was one time, you know, it was like, it wasn't going to be on the weekends. It was going to be one time, one weekend night. And once it was done, you could check it off and it was over. And you could predict it was not going to happen again for another week. And even when it happened, it was so robotic. And so, I mean, every time was like the time before and like the time that would be next. It was, I was not supposed to touch him in the bed when we slept. I was to keep my distance. He told me he was a touch me not. And I was not to touch him. During sex, I wasn't really supposed to touch him, if I could possibly help it. It was all just very, you know, this is something we have to do because it's Saturday, you know, because it's Friday. And it was a very mechanical, robotic, emotionless sort of thing. And he kind of got to the point where he told me that he was pretty asexual and just didn't need that kind of thing. And so after a while, I kind of bought into that and thought, okay, well, I guess that makes sense. And this was during the time that he was anything but asexual. He was having sex with everybody he could find, you know, but I wasn't.
It was called a-heterosexual.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It's true. It's true.
Yep, he had no need for heterosexual sex with his wife.
Right. So it was a painful time. And I stayed with him even after he told me about all the cheating. I stayed with him for another 2 years because that was, he said again, God had changed him. He was not going to be that way anymore. He had come to a realization. And I put him on a contract. I literally wrote out a contract that, you know, I will not go to the restroom in public. It was this long, detailed thing. And for about a year, I kept him on it. And I was strict. I was, you know, honestly, the warden. And then it came to the point where I decided I didn't want to live that way anymore, that I didn't want to be with somebody who didn't love me like a husband should love a wife. But it took me a year to convince myself, even after that, that there would be life on the other side, that I would make it, that I would figure out a way. You know, I have 3 kids. I'm a teacher, so I don't make a ton of money. I didn't see the other side. But after about a year of thinking through this, I don't deserve this. I deserve better than this. I deserve to feel loved. And maybe somebody will come along. After about a year of that thought process, I decided I was just going to jump and trust that, you know, I'd get wings on the way down because I certainly didn't have any. I had done, I think, a lot of healing before I left because for the last year, I was checked out because I knew I had found you. I had read your books. So for about a year before I ever left, I was already, I was gone. And, I mean, I was still there and we were still married, but my heart was checked out and was saying, I'm not going to continue living like this. So I was kind of figuring out the next steps before I took
it. And I always tell women that, you know, you really have to be emotionally free before you can be physically free.
Mm-hmm.
I think
right.
that once you know in your mind that, you know, I'm done with this, I don't have to walk out today, but I realize that I can't live like this anymore. I have to take my life back, which is what I tell women, get your life back. Then you can make a reasonable plan. I mean, some women are in emergency mode and they have to get out right away, and I understand that. But you don't have to feel obligated to leave that minute. You just have to now have the strength to think it out and think out how you can leave with the least amount of damage to you and to your kids.
Exactly.
So,
and it took me about a year
to
figure out my path. Right. And it took me about a year to get emotionally free. And by the time I felt like I was ready, I was ready. I really was, like, heart and soul ready. And it was it was still hard, you know, it was still the end and the separating all the stuff, you know, those kinds of things. It wasn't like it was easy and I said, yay, but it was I'm doing the right thing and I know it. But it was not a quick process for me, even after I'd learned of all the cheating. And I don't know if he cheated on me after that. I have no idea.
Did he give you a hard time about the divorce or not?
He put me through a lot of guilt. He, for the first time in either marriage, he called me a bitch, which he had never done before. but he got mean with me. He got really mean with me for a while. And then after he left the final time, he threatened to commit suicide, which he had threatened so many times during the times we had been married. So many times. It had almost become like, it had almost become a dull sound in my head because I just heard it so many times. And this last time, he had already left and he told me he was going to commit suicide and he told me how he was going to do it. He said, there's a bottle of pills on the bathroom counter. He was living with his parents at this point. And he said, there's a bottle of pills on the bathroom counter and I'm just going to go back there and I'm going to take all of them. Well, I decided, I've talked to you off the ledge a million times over the last 18 years and I'm not doing it anymore. So I called his dad and I said, I'm telling you, he's coming to your house. This is where the pills are. He's going to take them. It's up to you to stop him because I can't fight this fight anymore. And that was probably my first moment of taking me back and saying, I deserve more. I'm not going to continue to get caught in this cycle, because it really was a cycle. It was like, talk me down from suicide and then tell me you love me. You know, it was just a vicious cycle. And calling his dad and saying, it's on you now, was really one of my first steps of independence and saying, I'm not your wife anymore. I'm not your caregiver anymore. I'm turning you over. And his dad called the suicide prevention hotline. They couldn't deal with him, so they turned him over to a second person who couldn't deal with him, and they turned it over to a third person. They eventually came and took him and committed him to a mental institution for a while. And there they diagnosed him with bipolarism and those kinds of things. And so he was able to get on some medication. And after he got on the medication, his anger with me calmed down. I don't know that his anger calmed down or if the medicine just muted it. I'm not sure. I stopped getting the brunt of it at least. So that was some nice, it was kind of a nice relief from that, because it was not the relationship I was used to. I really was used to a friend kind of thing. You know, we were roommates who slept in the same bed, who got along really well.
So when you look back at your marriage, because your life was able to move on, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In a wonderful way.
Right. And I think a lot of women feel like after a long-term marriage that they really feel kind of hopeless or that there's nothing out there for them. And I think you would be the first to tell them that that is not the case, right?
I would be the first to say that there is so much out there waiting. You know, I am remarried to just the most wonderful man in the world, and he and I still, we act like newlyweds still, and we're going on 2 years at this point, which some people say is still newlyweds, but we get more excited to see each other every time now than we did even when we first met. And there is some beauty in what I have been through, because it makes me a better wife to him, because I appreciate the little things, and I see the beauty in his affection. You know, I'm very, I notice everything. And, you know, a lot of women, if their husband puts their arm around them, they swat away or they move away. I love all of it, and he knows it. And he and I have, there's a book called The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman that's a really interesting look at how people express and receive love. And we're very fortunate because we have the same love language. We both love words of affirmation and physical affection. So we are great for each other. But we've developed this amazing relationship that I couldn't have with him, I think, without what I went through. And so it's one of those times that I look back and think, you know what, I wish I had met him 20 years ago. But I'm better for him now than I ever would have been before. And so I see the purpose in the pain. I see what all of that horrible stuff I went through has done to help make me a better person, to make me a better wife. And he gets mad about what happened to me because he can't understand somebody treating me that way. So it upsets him. But at the same time, he sees how the ways that it shaped me and the ways that it made me appreciate the little things and the way it's made me a better person and a better wife in a lot of ways. And so I can't say obviously that everybody's going to find the great love of their life. I did. And if I didn't have what I had to compare it to, I might never see how incredible it is. But beyond the love that I've found, I'm finding pieces of me again that I had lost and that I had really let slip away because of the way I had beaten myself down. And I'm finding myself again. I'm losing weight, and he's a guitarist, and he and I are starting to sing together, and he plays, and we're performing together and that kind of thing. And so I'm opening up a world of opportunities that I had closed myself off from years ago. And
I think one of the things that people would want to find out from you, Christy, is this.
Mm-hmm.
You went into a new relationship. You're having a wonderful marriage. I mean, mm-hmm. you've learned so much from your past experience that you can appreciate a good marriage. Women often don't have the experience of knowing what to expect in a, you know, marriage to a straight person when they've only had one gay husband for many years. And I think
right.
that's what really surprises them the most. They don't even know what the expectations are. And I think the problem is because you've been downgraded for so many years, many times women, not you, I'm saying other women who we work with.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, when somebody's nice to them or somebody just tries to make them feel good about themselves, even though there may not, it may be another kind of not right relationship, they jump for it because they're so needy as far as feeling validated
right.
as a woman. We haven't been for so many years. And, you know, I feel so bad when I see women just jump and not really figure out their lives first and just go for someone
mm-hmm.
who's going to be a little nice to them or throw a few nice words at them. So can you tell women, like, some of the things when they are looking for a new relationship to find that true happiness, what they should expect from a man, in your opinion?
Wow. One of the things that caught me off guard in the beginning was how he wanted to be affectionate to me and
uh-huh.
how the same level of effort that our gay husbands went to get sex from other men, you know, a straight man is going to put that kind of effort into making you feel special and to wanting, you know, intimate relationship with you. And men love sex. And it was a very strange thing to me when I was the object of that. You know, it was very strange when it was suddenly that he, you know, I had met a man who was interested in me, because I was not used to that. And when he would tell me I was beautiful, my first instinct was to say, that's very sweet of you to say that, because I didn't believe it. And it took me a long time to give in to letting him see me as beautiful. You know, he would tell me I'm beautiful, and I'd say, yeah, but I need to lose weight. I would always find a way to deflect the compliments because I was not comfortable with them, because I had not had any in such a long time that seemed sincere at all, or that were sincere at all. And so I think that's one of the first things you have to do, is just to really just embrace the fact that a man may find you beautiful, but in order for you to do that, you have to start seeing you as beautiful again too. And I think that's one of the first steps, is learning to love yourself again, because we do beat ourselves up so much during these marriages that are not genuine and not real. But, you know, expect that. Expect affection. Expect to be desired. Expect to be seen as beautiful. But at the same time, I think it's so important for women to really know who they are, because you don't want to walk back into another relationship where you become something you're not for somebody else, because you've been there and done that, and it didn't work in large part because you're with a gay man, but it's not going to work for you to achieve ultimate happiness if you're doing it with a straight man. You know, you don't want to change who you are for anybody. And so I think, you know, at the beginning of walking out of the marriage, I think you have to take some time and figure out who you are and what you really want. One of the first conversations.
I think we're really vulnerable,
and
it's easy to, when you're vulnerable, it's
terrible.
Easy to meet predators who instinctively know. Who you are and how you're suffering.
Definitely.
And they pounce in on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
Did you have any other dating
experience
with your husband where that happened at all, where you met someone who you didn't
know? I did. At the beginning, it was similar to what you were talking about earlier, where you're just so happy that somebody is finding you attractive and that has interest in you. And it was one of those things where, you know, I did date this other person, and he was wanting to do things sexually that I didn't have any interest in. And I let it happen a couple of times. And then I realized, wait a minute, this is not who I am. This is not me, and this is not who I want to be. And I'm not going to let him keep doing this to me. This is not what I want. And there were so many things about him that I kept excusing and saying, okay, I can get over that. I can get over that. I can get over that. He's really sweet to me, and he thinks I'm pretty. And it was, you know, after a couple of months, I said, no, I will not do this to myself again. And so I ended it and decided, if I'm on my own forever, I'm on my own forever, but I'm not going to be somebody I'm not. This is not my story in life. I'm going to be successful, and it's going to be on my terms. And I'm not going to become somebody I'm not just so that I can have a man in my life. So, yeah,
that's
definitely
out there. I think that's such an important concept that sometimes women feel this need to accommodate men once they're out in the, you know, straight world.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't had
right.
much sexual experience. And they think, well, my husband didn't find me very interesting in bed. And now this guy is telling me I'm so interesting, I just have to do this or that, and you're not really comfortable with it. And sex is such a beautiful personal thing with someone.
Right.
And to have to feel uncomfortable doing anything And believe me, I make no judgment on what people do in bed, but it has to be what you want to do. Not just to please the man, but because it pleases you. You know, we're such people pleasers because we're always trying to make things right that can't be right. So we just move from that pattern into another pattern. And I always say to women, just because you are no longer with a gay husband doesn't mean you can't find some predator who's going to take advantage of you and make you feel even worse about yourself or more stupid. You know, you have some control on who to say no to. You have all the control, actually. And you don't have to feel bad about hurting someone's feelings. Did you ever feel like that, Christy, that you were dating a guy and you didn't want to break up because you wanted to hurt his feelings? You're always so worried about their feelings.
Always worried about their feelings and always excusing things that are not being true to who you are. And it's critical because, you know, the truth of the matter is when you decide to marry somebody, and we all know this because we've been here, you're choosing that person to spend every night with, to have at least a meal a day with. Usually, you know, you're choosing somebody as a partner in a lot of different areas of life and not just sexual. You know, it's such a huge commitment to marry someone. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's so hard to leave it, because once you've decided to make that commitment, you feel like some of your own value is tied up in that, and you don't want to admit that you made a bad decision, you know, that you chose the wrong person, and you don't want to feel like you're breaking those vows, because I think most people, men and women, I think take those vows very seriously. But when you get into a situation like the one we've all been in, the only thing you can do to be true to yourself and to save yourself from a world of heartache is to leave the marriage. And a lot of times that's really the best thing for both of you. You know, it's the best thing for you to release yourself from the constant pain and struggle. And a lot of times for these guys, it's the best thing that can happen to them too, because it releases them to go live the way their hearts really want to live. Even if they don't see it in the beginning.
I just got in an email from somebody who has a question from you. Her name is Lauren St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And she had a question. Dear Christy, Bonnie, okay, I have a question for Christy. Did you have a hard time finding someone who wanted you with children? I have 4 children and don't believe a man would want me, so I don't even bother looking. Laura.
He never questioned that I had children. It never bothered him. He has 1 daughter from a previous marriage, and we've talked about it since then. And I said, did it ever bother you that I had 3 kids? And he always just accepted them and loved them and everything was okay. And in the last 6 months or so, I thought, did it ever bother you? And he said, you could have had 1 million kids. I wanted you. And he said, I love them. And he has loved them like a daddy does, and he is wonderful to them, and I could not ask for more. But he said, I wanted you, and they came with the package. So,
Laura, I think that should be reassuring, because, you know, Christy did have children, does have children. So I guess the answer is, you know, when you're ready, you look, and if there's some wonderful man out there who loves you, he'll also learn to love your children. So you can't let that deter you. I know a lot of times we put stumbling blocks in front of us, and we think, well, I'm never going to meet somebody because I'm damaged, because I have children, because I had a bad marriage, because I had a gay husband. You know, we look at all these reasons why somebody's not going to want us, and that's because we just don't feel good enough about ourselves to start with, which means that you're not really ready to meet someone. You know, when you're ready to meet somebody, you have to feel top-notch about yourself, because it's hard enough getting into a relationship with someone. You can't once again let them take over who you are. Now, Christy,
it's
you've been doing some coaching, correct?
I have. It's been wonderful.
And, you know, for women who need coaching, you know, we have such a wonderful group of coaches in our network. And, you know, sometimes you just make a connection with someone. And Christy's someone who can understand everything that you've been through, because she's been there, especially if you've been in a long-term marriage. And she can help you get to a new point in your life. And all you have to do is ask for the help. So if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do it?
The best way to contact me, and I'm on Facebook. You can find me there. It's Christy. It's K-R-I-S-T-I. And then my last name is Van Sickle. It's V-A-N space S-I-C-K-L-E. And you can message me on Facebook. Or if you want to email me, you can do that too. And it's Christy Van Sickle, K-R-I-S-T-I-V-A-N-S-I-C-K-L-E 23@gmail.com.
Okay, and if you didn't get that all at once, you can write to me and I'll be happy to give you Christy's information. And Christy, I can't believe it that our time is running out, so I'd like for you to say a few words to the women of encouragement for this upcoming year. The most encouraging encouragement will be that you'll come back soon. Will you, Christy?
I will definitely come back soon. I would love to. I would love to. And ladies, I cannot tell you enough how much better it is on the other side. But at the same time, I have to tell you how much I understand where so many of you are, because I've been exactly where you are. I've been in that place of fear and dread of the unknown, and it's hard to see the other side at this point. So just know that there is another side, and that it is so much better. It is so much better. And I will be more than happy to help you walk through this time and help you get to that other side. That's something I love to do, because I think there are so few of us who are willing to stand up and help guide. But it's
also just
it
to let people know with coaching, coaching is not counseling. It's not therapy. It's helping you move on
right.
with your life from where you're starting at now. So, in other words, your therapist can go back in time and see why you do the things you do, but a coach is going to start with you right today and show you how to get to the next part of your life without looking back at a million things, but how you can move forward in a positive, creative way to feel good about yourself. I know that we have Suzette. She'll be coming back to us in a couple of weeks. You know, Suzette Vernon is one of our coaches, and
mm-hmm.
Christy's one of our coaches, so we're very blessed to have two wonderful coaches and some therapists that are part of our network that are able to do this to help women. So once again, take advantage of it. Christy's new website is going to be up soon, and I'll certainly let people know when that happens. And Christy,
okay.
once again, I thank you so much for taking the time and sharing with women and telling them about your story, because it's so encouraging to see that life can move on, that you can have a happily ever, re-ever after, that whatever
mm-hmm.
you had in the past is just that. It is your past. And I always
That's
say
exactly
that renewal
right.
of life at the beginning of the year gives people encouragement that life can change, and that's what this show is about. This is what our support network's about. My new newsletter will be out in the next week, so if you're not on the list, write me a note, and I'll send it to you. Anything we can do to keep encouraging you and helping you move to the new place, that's what we're about. So any last words that you would like to say?
I just want to wish all of you a happy new year, and most of us are starting some new habits and new things. If you are not out of your situation, let this be the year that you decide to do that for you, because you will be so much better off and so much happier on the other side of all this. And never look
and
back.
Take it from someone who was there for a long time and it was hard to get out, but you got out, right?
Absolutely. Very, very hard.
All right, ladies. So we're going to say our goodnights. Christy, I love you. Thank you so much for being here.
I love you too, Bonnie.
And for
Absolutely.
Always giving support to all the women. And I'll look forward to having you back here in the next couple months, okay?
That sounds wonderful. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, ladies. Good night. Have a wonderful week. And write to me at bondk@aol.com whenever you need help or support. Good night. Good night, Christy.
Good night, Bonnie.